Doom do 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 do.
Hiya, plant friends. Welcome to episode 92 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Plant friends, I hope you're having wonderfully planty weeks. In New York, it's the first week where there's like been nice weather, and that's been super helpful in the midst of all of the social distancing. So I hope that your spirits are high and that your plants are helping bring you some joy. I am just counting down the minutes till Mother's Day, which is the end of this week, because in New York, that's kind of like the safe time to plant up your stuff. And I'm ready for this balcony garden. I've been spending a few moments perched on my balcony every morning, just enjoying watching my little sprouts growing and being away from my phone. And I'm really excited to just get that balcony garden started and growing. And I know last month there was a lot of gardening content, but it's truly just because I want to make sure you're set up for success if you want to try gardening and growing your own food this summer, because 'tis the season. I also just want to humble brag, plant friends. I aced my soil science 101 final this week. As you know, I've been taking a bunch of online courses, several with the New York Botanical Garden, but soil science was like an 8-week course. I learned all sorts of sciencey, amazing stuff, and it was so fun. It also really kept me regimented. Every Tuesday, I showed up for 3 hours with these people on Zoom, and we learned so much. I'm going to have my teacher, Dr. Paltseva, come talk soil with us in a few episodes. But I've just really enjoyed educating myself and like developing skills in this time. So I've taken a bunch of online courses with the Botanical Garden. I just finished soil science. I'm taking introduction to plant science as well. And plant friends, I can't recommend it enough. I am looking at plants differently after 4 classes in this class, learning just how seeds actually germinate and learning how seeds actually reproduce. And fenestrations are an adaptation that plants developed. And it's so interesting. So I love that. And I've also just been trying to flex my artistic muscle. So I've been trying to do some botanical watercolor. I took a calligraphy course, Calligraphy 101 with Craft Jam. So I'm going to develop a little series on my Instagram that you'll see incorporating those new skills. And I'm just trying to find a great balance of letting myself let isolation be what it's going to be with social distancing. And some days I'm productive and some days I'm not, but also giving myself the opportunity to kind of expand my brain and educate myself. And perfect that I actually have Mark Hachadurian from the New York Botanical Garden on the show today, because I'm living my NYBG life with all these online courses that I'm taking. So begonias have been such a requested topic, and I'm terrified of them, which you will find out in our conversation. So I'm so excited to welcome back Mark Hachadurian. He is the director of Glasshouse Horticulture, and he's the senior curator of orchids at the New York Botanical Garden, and he's amazing. You might remember him from episode 50 of the podcast, which was all about Maranta, Calathea, and Stromanth. He walked us through amazing tips and tricks for caring for these finicky plants that I still use, which you'll hear about in our talk today. And today he's talking begonias with us. I have to say, before this episode, I was very skeptical about begonias. You'll hear my thoughts in the conversation. So since that conversation with Mark, I noticed that I have been kind of hopping on different plant shops, online vendors, looking for begonias. So I just ordered a ruby red begonia, which is actually a new cultivar I saw at Cultivate last year. It's a begonia that looks exactly like a Pilea peperomioides, and I'm super excited I found one. So I ordered one of those. I'm going to do an unboxing on the YouTube channel, so make sure you're subscribed so you catch it when I air it, because the plant hasn't arrived yet. But I'm on the hunt for an angel wing begonia, plant friends. So if you've got the inside scoop on where I can get one, or if you have a trusted vendor on angel wing begonias, let me know. Comment on the Instagram post associated with this episode. I want to hear where you're getting your angel wing begonias, because I think that's my favorite one ever. So I'm so thankful to Mark for lending his knowledge and expertise and just the loveliest personality to me and our community today. And I'm thankful to the Botanical Garden for lending him to us. Like I said, I'm obsessed with their online courses. They also created their entire hub called NYBG at Home. Since the garden's gates are closed, they've opened up their virtual gates. So they've got videos, plant guides, virtual events. They just launched their virtual journey through spring tour. So you can literally take virtual tours of the garden at the NYBG At Home Hub. And that includes tours of the daffodils that are blooming, the magnolias, the cherries, and they're going to be continually uploading more tour videos. So it's definitely something worth checking out. And their online courses. So if you're interested in checking out all of the amazing things that the Botanical Garden has to offer, you can check it out at nybg.org/nybg-at-home. So NYBG At Home, and the link is in the show notes. All right, plant friends, I adore Mark, and I'm so excited to bring you this conversation. Before I bring you this conversation with his botanical bro I adore, I want to tell you about a sponsor partner that I love and adore, and I have been using a lot of lately, Espoma Organics. Plant friends, you know I love Espoma Organics. They are a family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. And plant friends, it's planting time. It's gardening time. If you want to prep your garden for success, I suggest you try using Espoma Organics in your gardening practice. So springtime means a lot of soil-related things for us, whether you're an indoor gardener or an outdoor gardener. So if you're indoors, you might be beginning to fertilize your plants again. You might be repotting your plant babies after a dormant period, or you might be outdoors starting to amend your garden beds or planting up containers with herbs and veggies for your balcony garden like I am. So Espoma makes organic potting soils that are tailored specifically for how you're growing. So they have a garden soil, they have a raised bed soil, they have a potting soil, they have a soil for everything, and they also have a lot of single ingredient amendments and fertilizers if you need them. I'm in the midst of planting and potting up my balcony garden, which I am so freaking excited about. And I'm using Espoma Organic Potting Soil. And I'm also going to be sprinkling in some of their Biotone Starter to give my plants a little extra TLC as they adjust to their containers. Because I want them blooming and growing and giving me lots and lots of tasty things. And as we all know, I love their easy dose liquid fertilizer concentrates that make fertilizing foolproof. And to top it all off, plant friends, they're a third generation family run company with a commitment to the world with 100% solar powered plant and eco friendly packaging. They are the best. So to learn more about their organic indoor and outdoor products, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes to the Bloom and Grow Espoma Amazon storefront to see my favorite picks. Okay, plant friends, here's Mark. Welcome back to Bloom and Grow Radio, Mark.
Hey, it's great to be here. How have you been?
I'm so good, and I'm so thankful that you're back after the celebrated Maranta episode that we did almost a year ago, I guess.
Who knew I would become the Calathea queen, you know?
You are the Calathea queen. People still write me about your hospital trick with the humidity plastic bag. Maybe we'll talk about it with begonias as well. But people
actually, it applies
write me,
to them too. So
yeah. So for those who might have not listened to the Maranta episode, which you absolutely should go back if you have any interest in the prayer plant family, who are you and how did you become the botanical bro that you are today? And what do you do for the Botanical Garden?
Well, I am the director of Glasshouse Horticulture for the New York Botanical Garden. Essentially, I'm just a professional plant geek. I've been interested in horticulture as long as I can remember. Most people know me as an orchid expert, but as many of my friends will tell you, no plant is safe. Mm-hmm. So whatever it is, I love to grow it, whether it's Marantaceae orchids, begonias, aroids. As far as I'm concerned, plants are it and they're the center of my universe. So I'm happy to be here and chat with you and share my knowledge and expertise with everyone out there.
And in case you hear little chirpy chirps in the background, Mark and I are doing this interview in the midst of the New York City quarantine. And so Mark's at home and he's got quite the aviary at his home in New Jersey.
In addition to the plants at home, I've got a few birds. So if you hear some chirping in the background, that's the parakeets in the living room.
It's quite relaxing, honestly. It makes you feel like you're in like a tropical jungle, kind of.
Yeah, I need some jungle noises.
Yeah, we need some relaxing jungle music for me to stop listening to the city outside my window. So definitely go listen to the Maranta episode. I'm so excited to talk to you about begonias today because I feel like begonias are one of the like main Instagram trendy plants, especially. I have always been obsessed with the angel wing begonia and how that looks. But Mark, like, I don't get it. They have these huge leaves and these tiny little stems that hold these leaves up. And I just don't understand how how these plants work. And I hear that they're very finicky. People, like, I feel like, have a lot of opinions on how finicky begonias are, and they're so pretty. So why don't you share a little bit about what these, like, weird alien plants are and why they're so varied?
Well, you are absolutely right in that begonias are having a surge in popularity right now. Not only are they totally Instagrammable, but they're a wonderful group of plants for an incredible diversity of both foliage and flower form. Begonias are actually one a huge flowering plant family with over 1,800 different species. Whoa. So there's essentially a begonia for every type of environment imaginable. There are begonias that grow in near desert-like conditions. There are some that require perfect terrarium conditions, and if you do one thing wrong, they crisp up in an instant. Mm-hmm. But the diversity of begonias includes plants that are absolute miniatures, tiny little things, to things that plants that will get 6, 7, 8 feet tall or even taller. So a lot of the myth and mystery surrounding begonias is very similar to something, say, like orchids, where you have this huge diversity of plants, and it's really difficult to generalize in saying that all begonias require these set of conditions. Mm. Because what you then need to learn and understand is what type of begonia you have. And starting out, many people will be growing Rex begonias with their beautiful metallic patterns, colors, and foliage. Mm-hmm. Angel wing begonias, of which Begonia maculata is kind of one of the more coveted plants these days, with those polka dot silver polka dots on their foliage. You have rhizomatous begonias, which are these long, thickened roots with beautiful swirled or patterned leaves. You even have tuberous begonias, which will go completely dormant during part of the year, and then resprout full of flowers and foliage at a particular time of the year, mostly in the summer. So depending on begonias, a lot of conflicting information is out there, because it requires a lot of basic knowledge to understand which type of begonia you have, and then the specific care for that kind of begonia is where it becomes a little confusing.
So when it comes to all of those different types of begonias you just listed, how do they get broken down? So is it, you know, you mentioned tuberous and rhizomatic. Those are things that happen in the root. So is it based on their root system?
Essentially based on the plant form.
Okay.
You will see, if you actually quick look at the begonia diversity, you'll see begonias are divided into different classifications. There are cane begonias, shrub-like begonias, Rex begonias, angel wing begonias. You'll see that
wax is one
group.
I feel like I see people wax, talk
you see
about.
Wax begonias are a common summer annual, and you see the Begonia semperflorens hybrids all over the place in summer. So when looking at begonias, it's a matter of understanding which classification your plant belongs to. Mm-hmm. And then from there, that's where you can generalize. You will learn that angel wing begonias are propagate in a particular way, enjoy a certain set of conditions. Or in the case of tuberous and rhizomatous begonias, they will have a seasonal dormancy in which they want drier conditions. They may drop their leaves. And so you just have to understand what type of begonia you have, and then from there, make the right choices in terms of its cultural needs.
So I would imagine that of those different classifications for indoor cultivating, caring for, what would be, I would imagine ones that go dormant probably isn't a great idea. So what types would you suggest for people who want to be houseplant parents and have them indoors?
Well, begonias are actually very durable, and they've been cultivated for many, many years, and they make great houseplants. They were popular in Victorian times and even into the early 19th and early 20th century. Certain plants like the Iron Cross begonia were common heirloom houseplants, just like Sansevierias or Aspidistras. And if you don't believe me, look in the background of the painting American Gothic. There are two plants on the porch. One of them is a Sansevieria and the other is the Iron Cross begonia.
Oh, no way.
So even if they appear in all sorts of fun places, begonias were very popular because they were easy to grow. They adapted to our home conditions, and they're also easy to propagate, which is one of the reasons why they're great, is that you can propagate them in many, many different ways, which makes them a great pass-along plant for people to share with friends or, you know, multiply them in their home. The begonias themselves generally will like moderate humidity. There are some that require high humidity, and the terrarium begonias are a whole separate group. But in general, moderate humidity, medium to low light conditions. Most begonias don't like blazing hot sunlight and they will burn very easily. And they actually like to dry out slightly between waterings. Like many plants, one of the most common ways to fail with begonias in the home is by overwatering. Most begonias have very delicate and very fine fibrous root systems that actually rot very easily if given too much water. So it's best to allow them to go on the dry side between waterings. And that's one of the big, big things that I always stress about begonia culture is just making sure you don't overwater them. Because most of the common diseases they have are also usually related to overwatering.
Okay. So when thinking about how to care for them indoors, I like to think about where they live outdoors first. So when thinking about caring for them indoors, I like to think about where they come from outdoors. So in real life, in nature, because there's so many different types, do they come from all over the world or is there a certain type of climate that they tend to be found in?
There are begonias from all over the world. There are begonias that are even winter hardy in New York City and that they will survive our cold winters. Most begonias come from relatively close to the equator. They're found in somewhat moist habitats with good humidity, very typical conditions. You find them growing alongside orchids and bromeliads and aroids in
most houseplants. most house tropical plants. foliage plants.
Very similar conditions. As you get into their native habitats, there are some that are from these very extreme or very delicate environments in which they are surrounded by very low light and perfect high humidity. But those are kind of the exception, although some of them are really spectacular plants.
Yeah. I feel like the big overarching thing with begonias is their unbelievable leaves, which is kind of funny because that's the big overarching thing with the Marantaceae family as well. Why are their leaves so incredible? Like, why do they have such amazing patterns in their leaves? And is that like something that they've adapted to do?
Absolutely. If you look at foliage diversity, a lot of plants that are from low light environments have very patterned and sometimes reflective patterns on their foliages. What that is sometimes referred to as like what people call cryptic coloration, and that what it does is it makes the leaves look somewhat unpalatable to an herbivore or kind of camouflages them in reality, because those wild patterns and spots and colors to the eye of an herbivore don't look like a leaf. They kind of confuse animals into thinking maybe they're not as tasty. And sometimes those reflective patterns have some adaptations to low light conditions as well.
Okay. Is that what one of our listeners, Terracotta Warrior on Instagram, asked about iridioplasts and low light adaptations?
Oh my goodness. You guys get the really A-list questions.
Yeah. We're a community of nerds.
Oh, big time. so that type of reflectance in their foliage is a way to help plants grow in diffuse light situations.
Okay.
In low light situations. Granted, I'm sure I'd have to Google to get the correct answer there. But it's something that many begonias, the lower the light you grow them in, the better the reflectance on that foliage becomes. So these reflective cells...
They look kind of like iridescent, right?
Yes.
That's the ones we're talking about.
One of the
about.
Most famous ones that's been a real collector these days is Begonia pavonina.
Right.
The peacock begonia that when exposed to kind of a flash of light has this iridescence like the blue of a peacock's feather. But this is a way for plants to survive and photosynthesize in extremely low light environments.
Okay.
To be honest, I'm not exactly an expert on iridioplasts, but what this is these are all adaptations to be growing in low light environments. So,
okay, so they're coming from low light environments in general, outdoors.
Some species, not all. But there are some begonias that'll grow in very bright light, almost cacti-like conditions.
Wow. But those low light ones make sense that they would do well indoors when our light, no matter how bright our southern facing windows are, is going to be lower than outdoors.
Exactly. Many of the low light begonias also have very thin leaves. And most of those low light varieties need constant high humidity. Many of those are grown in terrariums to keep that humidity and moisture. But ironically, many of those begonias also don't like to stay super saturated at the roots. they actually prefer even moderate moisture, not really wet environments to grow. They just love that high humidity around their foliage, but not super saturated around their roots, which is kind of ironic. But when you see the way these plants grow in the wild, you'll see many begonias growing on a very, very thin layer of moss on the surface of rocks. So they're not necessarily very deep rooted. So the roots will dry out and be exposed to a little bit of air and not really in these really wet environments.
But they're probably used to getting a lot of rainfall and then letting it dry out and then getting more like very consistent rainfall.
What you'll find is they grow in these very sheltered and protected spots, like the underhang of a cliff, in which you have this very stable environment with very low air movement. It was just on a trip in Colombia, and it was shocking to see how dark some begonia species grow. They almost seem like they're growing in the caves more than out in the sunshine.
Wow. Okay. So I guess this conversation is going to be tricky because I feel like the answer for a lot is going to be like, well, for most or for some, but
it does fall into that category.
So maybe we can pick a few, like a Rex begonia. I feel like we see a lot, definitely Angel Wing. Costa Farms just came out with an Angel Wing begonia in their new trending tropicals line that people are like freaking out about.
I heard there was an incident at a big box store of people fighting over some begonias.
Yeah. So I'm like, got to get my hands on one of those. So let's definitely talk about Angel Wing. Let's definitely talk about cane begonias, I feel like is another one. And maybe any other ones that we feel like are going to show up in indoors a lot. So soil-wise, what soil are we putting these puppies in?
Well, for almost all begonias, I have found they always do best in a soilless mix. A peat-based soilless mix is very amenable to almost any begonia I've ever grown.
When you say soilless mix?
Soilless mixes are mixes that are generally peat, perlite, vermiculite, and do not contain any topsoils or any heavy inorganic materials in them. Okay. Those fibrous root systems, they love that little bit of organic material from the peat and the evenness of moisture it provides. And I find they root best and grow in those types of mixes.
Got it.
So you want something that's very light, fluffy, very open for your begonias.
And that's going to drain. So those roots, those thin fibrous roots don't sit in water, which
is that
everybody's right.
That perfect balance of moisture and air around the roots.
So that's the soil. And so with the watering, it sounds like you're giving it a good water and then you're letting the soil dry out to like, I like to measure just with my finger knuckles, like two knuckles in, you let it dry out and then water it again.
Yeah. You want to make sure they're not kept super saturated, but you do want to allow them to approach dryness before watering. Not bone dry, because the plants will definitely wilt before then.
Right.
But you want to make sure that they're not kept too wet. So just basically, as you would say, it's kind of two knuckles in. You want to let it dry out towards the surface.
Yeah. I also have like little fingers, but whatever. Okay. So for light, most begonias are coming from low light conditions. So you got to be careful of burning them. Like I'm all southern facing windows. So I'm not putting a begonia in my southern facing window.
Think calathea light.
Okay.
Think Marantaceae light. Think African violet light.
Right.
In which bright filtered light would be ideal, but not that full sun that you would have for a snake plant or a succulent, for sure.
Okay. What about a northern window would probably be okay?
Many begonias do great in northern windows. Begonias are actually pretty adaptable in that they'll adapt from bright filtered light to really low light conditions. They may grow a little slower and get a little stretched in a lower light condition, but they will survive. So some people always talk about, you know, African violet light. Very similar conditions for your begonias.
Got it. And let's talk about humidity, because I'd love for you to talk about your plant hospital again, just because people loved that from the other episode. And I know some begonias that we love like humidity more. So can you talk a little bit about that?
So I think one of the biggest challenges for houseplant fanatics now in any home is humidity. Our homes are not designed to hold a lot of moisture. It's not something that people usually want around. But unfortunately, many of our houseplants require it and really thrive and need it to survive. So with growing plants in the home and getting that higher than average humidity, there's a couple of different tricks you can do. First thing is plants are social. They like being together. And since plants naturally release moisture into the air, if you group your plants together, they will create what's essentially called a microclimate, an area of localized higher humidity by keeping your plants next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than dispersing them one in every corner, if you keep your plants together, you'll get that natural environment that where they will benefit each other. From there, one of the other tricks, the old pebble tray still works very well, in which mm-hmm. you have a tray, you can fill it with small pebbles and keep that filled with water. Not so much that the pot sits in the water itself, but those pebbles will provide an increased surface area for evaporation, allowing water to get into the air in the form of vapor, keeping that humidity higher around your plants. It's a trick that's been done for years and works very well. If you want to go to the other extreme, it's not uncommon for people to get a small ultrasonic humidifier that maybe runs on a timer to help increase the ambient humidity in their homes. In reality, higher than average humidity in our homes isn't just beneficial for our plants, but for us as well. It's good for your skin. It's good for your furniture. It's good for your lungs. So that little bit of higher humidity, and when we're talking about 50% or above, is beneficial, especially if people are in apartments where sometimes they can't control the heat or it's overheated. That added humidity is a real boon to everything in our homes. That little bit of an ultrasonic humidifier is great. If some people don't want to go to that extreme, the next question people always ask about is misting. Well, yeah. I missed my plant a couple of times a day. Well, in reality, misting your plant is good. It's beneficial. It's not bad. But it really doesn't do much to build the humidity in your home. It does more to help your wrist strength than it does to get that humidity, because that little spritz eventually evaporates and then dissipates into the room. I don't have a problem with misting your plants. It's a way for people to interact with them, and it's really a time when people pay closer attention. They get that chance to observe plants. But alternatively, we had talked about the plant hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Plants like Marantaceae and begonias, because they like higher than average humidity, they do really well in terrarium environments. And so growing begonias in terrariums, I mean, you might need a big terrarium for a tall angel wing. A simple cloche, a jar sort of overturned, or even if you need to rehab a sick begonia, taking a plastic bag loosely over the top of the plant, you can support the bag by some bamboo sticks or a bent piece of wire, creates a little greenhouse over the top of that plant.
Mm-hmm.
And not only will that help you rehab a sick plant, it'll really help plants, like if you've got to have that begonia or calathea, it'll give you that little bit of bonus of humidity in its own little personal greenhouse to help that plant survive and thrive in your home environment.
Those cloches are so beautiful. They make some really beautiful styles now. I was looking on Terrain's website the other day and I was like, these are so pretty.
Look, you can find inexpensive ones made out of plastic. You can source antique ones mm-hmm. that, you know, when I started in horticulture so many years ago, these were things that you had to hunt high and low for. There was no mm-hmm. place where you could go. But now the options and styles are, it's almost limitless. I know people who have repurposed tall cylinder vases instead of using them for flower yeah. arranging. It gives you a nice little mini greenhouse. And even people who, those kind of candle lanterns that you see all the time at like places like Home Goods.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little glass box.
Yeah, it's so cute.
Some ventilation. So you could even use your creativity and repurpose some other things and turn them into mini greenhouses for your begonias. So the ideas are, and the options are kind of limitless.
Mm-hmm.
It's just using a little bit of imagination, some basic knowledge and creativity to come up with a beautiful solution to create that little bit of localized humidity for your begonias at home.
Plant friends, if you end up finding a cloche or repurposing something, put it on Instagram and tag me and Mark because we want to see it.
Let me tell you, the amount of crazy terrariums that I've seen mm-hmm. never fails to impress me.
I love that.
This was growing up. These things weren't available. I used to go after big pickle jars and big mayonnaise jars to make terrariums in. You know, that mm-hmm. those were my options. Nowadays, the amazing and beautiful containers that are out there, I've seen some really incredible specimen begonias grown in just basic old glass containers that, you know, people found for a dollar at the thrift store.
Yeah, the thrift stores are great. And like estate sales are like great places to look.
Totally.
friends. I'm so excited to tell you about another sponsor this week, Modern Sprout. Modern Sprout offers simple, stylish, and sustainable green thumb solutions for every home, no matter the size of your home, your lighting situation, or your level of planty expertise. They truly have something planty for everyone. We know I love their grow lights. I've got their smart grow bar and their smart grow house installed in my apartment, and you can check out the YouTube video I made to show the installment. But I want to talk to you about their amazing other products this episode. They've got stuff for indoor and outdoor gardeners. So if you're an indoor gardener, they've got indoor garden kits that will have you growing your own herbs, flowers, and even houseplants from seed in no time. They're all super easy to set up, and I've used them super successfully. And then if you're gardening outdoors, you can do what I'm doing right now, which is use their seed starter kits to start your seeds indoors and get a jump on the season. So I'm starting my cherry tomatoes and I'm starting my sunflower seeds right now under my Mod Sprout grow bar. So it's a nice little synergistic thing I got going on. In addition to their grow kits, they have a wide array of planty accessories, from super stylish pruning shears that I'm kind of obsessed with, to misters, to even garden organizers and aprons. I'm also a big fan of their glow and grow candles. I'm currently burning their wildflower one right now, and you just burn, plant, and grow. So the candle actually comes in a gorgeous ceramic planter, and once it's done burning, you plant it up with the kit that is included in the candle purchase. It's super fun, and the flavors and smells are wonderful. So plant friends, moral of the story, I could talk about Mod Sprout all day, but they really have something for everyone. If you need a gift, they've got something for anyone you might need to be shopping for. If you want to up your interior style, they've got grow lights, planters, and accessories to help you elevate your indoor vibe. And plant friends, if you just want to treat yourself, they've got a lot of nice little treats on their website. So go check out all of their amazing products at modernsprout.com and use the code 15BLOOM for 15% off at checkout. Once again, that's modernsprout.com and use the code 15BLOOM for 15% off at checkout. What about the angel wing begonia? Let's just talk about it for a little bit. This is one of the ones that I'm like, the stem is so thin and the leaves are so big. Like, how do the leaves stand up? I don't understand the physics of it. But is there anything specific care-wise we should know about angel wing?
So angel wing begonias can actually get quite large. We often see them as single rooted cuttings, just a few inches tall. Mm-hmm. And it seems, as you said, disproportionate. You have this tiny little plant with these really, really long leaves.
Yeah.
Like begonia maculata, I've got specimens at the botanical garden that are easily 6 feet tall. They can get enormous over time. And so I've even got one angel wing begonia that I think now is pushing 8 feet tall. It's not uncommon for them to get really large.
And is it 8 feet tall because the leaves have gotten that tall?
Or no, the stems get higher and higher and higher.
Wow.
If you feel the stems on an angel wing begonia, they're actually pretty hard. They're mm-hmm. pretty durable. And they're designed to be able to not only get that plant up tall, but mm-hmm. also to support the weight of the foliage, and they will branch over time.
Okay.
Angel wing begonias produce a very large fibrous root system. And with most begonias, they're actually pretty heavy feeders in terms of their growth. Because many begonias are also rapidly growing, producing a lot of foliage, a lot of stems once they get established, it's not uncommon for people to use a slow release fertilizer mm-hmm. to provide them with those constant nutrients that they need. You will find that if a begonia starts sort of losing nutrients and running out of food, it drops a lot of its lower leaves. And
okay.
So you have these long stems with only a few leaves on the end. Mm-hmm. And it's best to keep those plants well fed to make sure they can keep all of the foliage on their stems, so you don't wind up getting a plant with this sort of very sort of skeletal appearance.
Okay. Because we have a listener question. Welcome to the Jungle Home said that she has a begonia with new leaves that keep yellowing and dropping. So that, could that be a that fertilizing
could,
thing?
That could be a nutrient deficiency, and it could also be a humidity issue. With the new leaves that are yellowing and dropping, I would actually, before I ruled out anything else, I would get yourself your magnifying glass and take a real close look at that new growth. One of the most common pests of begonias in the home is the dreaded red spider mites.
Oof, yeah.
And there's also other broad mites that don't make webbing that will plague begonias. So just because you don't see webs doesn't mean the mites aren't there. And many times they will concentrate on that tender, delicious new growth. and attack the plants there. Some of these mites are so tiny, you really truly can't see them with the naked eye, and you need a magnifying glass. And so get a close-up look at that new growth to make sure the mites aren't present. And that could be the cause of the yellowing on that new growth more than a food issue.
Could it be overwatering as well?
Yes, it could be, because one of the things is with overwatering is if you damage the root system of the plant, not only have you damaged its ability to take up moisture, but you've also damaged its ability to take up nutrients. And with the reduced root system, essentially the plant is kind of starving because it has no way to get food into it. So, you know, it might be tip the plant out of its pot, make sure the roots are healthy and white. Begonia whites should be very fibrous and white, such a light tan colored. And then check for pests on that new growth. And that would be my recommendations for that plant that's yellowing at the newest growth.
Okay. The Rex begonia is the one that's like darker and kind of swirly, right?
Yes.
We see those a lot in plant shops.
Absolutely. Because there are irresistible with those metallic, many times blue and purple and
purple,
pink and all sorts of electric colors on the foliage. People get them home and they get terrified because suddenly the plant starts dropping leaves.
Okay.
Rex begonias will actually go through a seasonal, it's not a true dormancy in which they go completely to sleep, but they will slow down, especially in the cooler times of the year in which they'll drop a lot of their leaves. You'll find that they look kind of sad with just a few leaves hanging on. But once the warm temperatures and humidity returns in our springs to summer, they'll start to grow again and put out tremendous amounts of foliage. With Rex begonias, if they get a chill for any length of time, many times triggers that dormancy. So especially if they're put near drafty windows or in areas where it gets really cool at night, they will drop a lot of foliage. Rex begonias enjoy warm, humid temperatures to really perform well.
If you had a grow light in your apartment, could you put them under a grow light that is like a normal amount of light that isn't affected by the seasons? And will that affect its inability to go dormant?
No, actually grow lights are phenomenal for begonias. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a single window in your home and you could grow the most gorgeous begonias under artificial light.
Okay.
Because artificial light is not as intense as natural sunlight. It's the perfect type of light for begonias because they're never going to get burned in sun.
Okay.
And what's great about the artificial light is you have the ability by setting it on a timer to make sure that plant gets the light duration that it needs to keep it from going dormant. Many plants, including begonias, can be somewhat light sensitive. And in our winters in the Northeast United States, when our day length is much shorter, that actually triggers a lot of plants to go dormant. So the addition of a grow light will keep that plant growing year round and kind of prevent it from going to sleep. Because with the long days, plants still think it's summer. It's great for them, actually.
It's tricky. We trick them. Okay, so let's do some listener questions. So Daniel wants to know, what's the best variety for a begonia beginner? So someone who's never done a begonia before, like me, what might you suggest as some gateway begonias to kind of let yourself tap into the world of begonias without, you know, killing something immediately?
Well, actually, I find angel wing begonias are really great plants to start with. They're durable. And what I like also about angel wing begonias, if they get a little tall or they get a little leggy, you can easily root them from cuttings. And they're a begonia that actually responds well to a little bit of a haircut. So if it gets too leggy, you take off the top growth, root those cuttings, trim them back, give them a repot, and they'll sprout very quickly from the old canes.
We had another question from a listener saying that if her begonia has gotten too leggy, so she wants to cut off the top. And then she said, could she actually put those new rooted cuttings in the same pot to kind of fill out the bottom of the pot, or should she put them in a new pot?
What I would do is I would root them first and then put them in that container, because your cuttings are going to require a different watering regime than the parent plant would be.
Okay.